You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Tara Pyfrom. What we talk about in a nutshell is her decision to move her family from her home in the Bahamas to Canada, which is a story worthy of telling all on its own. But what makes this particular story interesting is that the impetus, the reason she made the move, was that she lived through a hurricane, Hurricane Dorian. Now, for the listeners who may not know, I also live in hurricane country. So tropical storms are something that I personally do think about. Something that's a part of life. We do also talk about, you guys, gardening and her dogs. All right. So now, if you're ready, I'm ready. Let's do this. Tara Pyfrom, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so happy you're here. Are you ready for a chat?
I'm looking forward to it.
Let's do it. All right. So I start every interview, pretty much, almost all of them, by asking people where in the world they are right now, which is going to be an interesting part of this conversation. Where do you call home these days?
So I call New Brunswick, Canada home these days.
Wow, I had no idea what you were going to say there. That's okay. New Brunswick, Canada. Okay, I love it. All right. So before we dive into the topic of the day, I like to ask people a little bit about themselves outside of their family, outside of their job, outside of the topic of the day. Tell us as little or as much about yourself, maybe a hobby or a pastime that you enjoy to get us started.
Okay. I worked for 15 years in office administration. So very organized personality. I love to garden and we'll probably talk a bit more about that. It's a bit of a passion of mine, and I've kind of transferred from tropical gardening to Canada gardening, which is an entirely new experience. And I have three dogs who I absolutely adore and could not imagine life without having a dog.
Very cool. So gardens, dogs, and organization. Got it. Love it. That's like you said, I can see there's connections there. All right, very good. To get to the topic of the day that you proposed, you have a story about living through Hurricane Dorian that you'd like to share. Does that sound like something we can talk about today?
Yeah, that's definitely something we can talk about.
Let's do it. All right. So let's start about talking about life before the hurricane, setting the stage, as it were, a lot before. Tell us a little bit about you and life in the Bahamas when you were younger, maybe around high school or middle school age. What did you love? Were you thinking your future would look like? That kind of stuff.
So I was born and raised in the Bahamas. My family goes back about 8-9 generations, all island people. I grew up on a very tiny island, only about 300 people population. Okay. High school, I would have taken a 20-minute ferry boat ride to get to high school every day.
Wow.
Yeah, that's an interesting and unique one, right? But growing up on a tiny island surrounded by the ocean is a big part of who I am. I never, in a wildest dreams, ever imagined living away from the ocean. The ocean's just part of who you are when you're an islander.
Yeah.
And I never went to university. I went straight into the workforce, straight out of high school, started out as a junior legal secretary with zero experience and learned on the job.
All right. So very good. So a small island in the Bahamas. So, I mean, I think that everybody knows what the Bahamas are, but if you spend a lot of time there, there are a lot of little tiny islands in the Bahamas. And there's a very different feel from the big islands to the small islands. As you bop around in there, which makes sense, right? That's the same as a bit different feel from a big city to a small city. But it sounds like you were from a very small island.
Yeah, very small island, very, very separated from the bigger island and even more separated from what would be the capital city.
And you had, so you grew up and your family is from the Bahamas. And I looked up the stats for Hurricane Dorian in my research for this interview. That went through 2019. This is a pretty recent story. It didn't hit where I live in Miami, so I had to look it up because when we think about living through storms, I might be aware of a storm that doesn't come my way, but it's not imprinted on my memory as one that I actually have to deal with. I don't know if you're the same. But what, since you grew up there and you come from a family of islanders, what was your relationship to storms like before you went through this massive storm? Like, I mean, it's a part of life living near the ocean in some respects.
Yes, absolutely a part of life, part of my parents' life, part of my grandparents' life. We have storms. We have our list of preparations. We hunker down. We do the things. We don't run away from storms. You're living on an island. Running away involves an airplane. So, yeah. And throughout the course of my life, as a child, I don't remember a hurricane. As a young teenager, I don't remember any hurricanes. The first major hurricane I remember, I was probably about 15. And then when I was about 17 or 18, we had what then was like the biggest storm we'd ever had. And that was in 1999. We had Hurricane Floyd and was devastation, terrible devastation. We were fine. Our home was fine. So it wasn't a personal impact, it was a community impact. Since 1999, the storms have increased in frequency. The storms have increased in strength. So there are more storms than I can remember the names of since 1999. I can remember the names of the big ones, the ones that had a direct personal impact. As you mentioned, if it didn't directly impact you, then you may not remember the names of them. So yeah, more and more frequent storms, more and stronger storms, to the point that when my wife and I eventually built our home, it was built with storms in mind. So all of the latest technology, the strength of the house increased from houses that would have been built in the past, all preparing for stronger storms.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I'm curious about it. I won't ask you too much about it. I'm curious about it as someone who lives in the path of storms, because we do build, but the situation there is when you build for something that you don't know what's coming, there's no way to know if it works until you get hit, which is a weird thing to live through. A weird thing to live through. It's like, this is storm proof. And you're like, well, okay, is it? Like, how do we know? All right, I'll take your word for it. All right, because they, yeah. All right. Okay, so 2019, Dorian is tied with the storm from 1935, which is just called the Labor Day storm. It has the record of being the strongest hurricane. I don't know if this is still correct, but it did come up when I looked it up. The strongest hurricane in the Atlantic Basin. That's massive. Category 5, which is the highest that we rank, even though many people think the scale should now be expanded. So that's the highest when it hit the Bahamas. What do you remember from the days before Dorian? Because you live in storm country, you are raised with awareness of the weather, respect for the storms. They don't, it's not 1935 now, so we do have the weather forecast. In Miami, you have to like tune out the news because they're like, hey, there's a cloud off the coast of Africa. Get ready, you know? And that's weeks away. I'm like, and if you live in storm country, I don't know about you, but I'm like, yeah, no, I've got the water. I've got the batteries. Like, there's, my prep begins right before the storm. What was it like for you guys, say, 3 to 4 days before the storm?
By 3 to 4 days before the storm, we knew it was going to hit us. So by 3 to 4 days of the storm, we were already bracing for what was potentially the biggest storm we had ever had. So our awareness of the storm, like you said, starts when, oh, look, there's a cloud out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean and we don't know what it's going to do. We can't even, it's too far to even send the hurricane hunters, the airplanes, to go out and test it yet, but it looks bad. So our awareness, most of our weather forecast actually comes from South Florida. So what you're seeing is what we would be watching, but we are watching it closer. So 10 days out, we know there's something. 6 days out, it's closer. 4 days out, it's all of the spaghetti models and all of the cones and all of those things have us right in the middle of it. So even if it goes left or right, we're still going to be impacted. So at 3 to 4 days, we're already filling up our cars with gas. We're going to the grocery store to buy whatever we need because we're not going to wait till the 24 hours before because the lines are insane and they run out of things.
Yeah.
So we're used to this process. Yes, we've got the batteries. Yes, we've got the water. Oh, let's go buy a couple of cans of whatever. Let's start putting away patio furniture.
Yes.
Let's start securing our plant pots. Let's start, you know, doing all the things that we do several times a year, every year.
Yeah. Bring everything inside. The cone of uncertainty. Yeah, it's such an unpleasant feeling. It's such an unpleasant feeling to be in that. And it really, really is uncertain. So not much survives the impact, the direct impact of a Category 5 hurricane. That's just kind of the way it is. It's a massive, massive storm. I moved to where I live after Andrew, which was a Category 5 that blew through. Mm-hmm. But the devastation, it destroys everything within its path. So share with us where you were when you were riding out the storm. For people who are listening, who've never kind of been through it, bad weather is bad weather and everybody knows what that is, but sort of, you know, like where were you when you hunkered down? It's a long time. Tell us where you were and then sort of tell us what happened as you went through that 24-hour period.
Okay. So we were living on Grand Bahama Island in the city, just outside the city of Freeport. So it's actually the northernmost island in the Bahamas. The tip of the island is only about 80 miles from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So we're right next door. This storm came from almost directly east. And there's another island called Abaco.
That was the impact point, yeah.
That was the first impact point. So the storm came across Abaco before it came and hit Grand Bahama. So we were seeing videos and hearing things of the devastation coming out of Abaco before it got to us. We have relatives that live in Abaco. Thankfully, they were all safe. They were not a part of the worst that Abaco got. But that's like 24 hours before it hit us. And it's like,
okay, so 24 hours. So you got to see some of those pictures and you were still waiting. Holy crap.
Yeah. So the reality of it becomes, this is the worst storm anyone has ever seen. It's 24 hours. There's nowhere to run. We can't get out of the way. That's when your mind starts, okay, we're going to be okay. We're going to be fine. We'll be fine.
What and could go wrong?
We've done it before. We had a terrible hurricane in 2016, Hurricane Matthew. We had no electricity for like a month. And so for us, the lens of what would happen came from what the aftermath would look like, because Hurricane Matthew had only been 3 years before and the aftermath was terrible. And so we're looking at Hurricane Dorian from a lens of what after will look like.
Yeah.
We've been through so many storms. We've always been safe. Our home stood up to Hurricane Matthew, no problem. All of our hurricane-proof windows held. Our roof was fine. So for us, we felt safe in our home. It was a fairly new home, concrete construction, extra hurricane straps in the roof, hurricane windows, all of the things that keep us safe.
Right. This is what I'm talking about. Like you buy the stuff, they tell you it's going to work.
Yes. But
you don't know until Dorian knocks on the door.
Yeah, until you try it. So the storm makes its way across and it's moving very slowly.
Oh, no.
And the forecast is that it may actually stop.
On top of your house.
Hurricanes don't stop. They just might move slowly. They might move faster. They don't stop. The forecast was it might stop. But they don't know when. And they don't know for how long, and they don't know where it's going to go after it stops. So there's a lot of uncertainty. I mean, weather predicting is uncertain anyway. This storm had an extra level of, we don't know what's going to happen. So we did everything, hunkered down. About 10 o'clock p.m. on the night of September 1st, 2019, wind started to kick up. We went to bed knowing that the storm was coming. We've done everything we can do. Got up every couple of hours, checked the weather forecast, checked the outside, checked the windows, checked everything. By 4 a.m., was the beginning of the deluge. We had our house on one of the saltwater canals on Grand Bahama. So we had saltwater ocean in our back door. We knew that the area had had water flooding in storms in the past. There had been 6 inches to a foot of water in the area years before.
That's so okay. We built, 6 inches to a foot.
So we built our home up. We had a 4 foot foundation in addition to just the natural slope of the land with 6 feet above sea level. So we had about 10 feet above sea level, high tide mark. So we're good. We're elevated. So even if we get a foot of water, it's not going to matter. If we get 2 feet of water, it's not going to matter. It's going to wreck our garden. Yeah. We'll be fine. By 4 a.m., we had water inside our house. That's 10 feet above sea level.
10 feet of surge.
Yeah. So it's annoying. We're going to have to slosh around in water for a while. The windows are all fine. The roof's fine. We're safe inside. But then the water kept rising. And so it went from ankle height to knee height in an hour.
And was your first story, was it living space or was it like garage storage space?
No. So first story is living space.
Living space. All right. All one level. So you didn't have, okay. So, yikes. All right. Yeah. So
no second story.
Oh my goodness. All right. So you're on a canal, the water is rising and you've got roughly 12 feet of space inside. How high does the water go?
The water keeps going. We were swimming inside the house.
Oh my
and it kept going. We had my wife and I, our 6-year-old daughter, and 5 dogs swimming inside of our house. We can't. There's no rescue.
No.
We put out an SOS, knowing that no one could come get us. But whenever someone can help, we need help.
Which is what you're supposed to do. That is what you're supposed to do. Just so that people understand, it's like you set off the beacons, you alert the authorities. They cannot respond during the storm because it puts them at risk. Mm-hmm. So, but you are still supposed to do it because that puts you on the response call for as soon as it's safe.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we did all the things, and it just went from one. Your brain stops functioning normally when faced with death. It becomes purely fight or flight. There's no flight.
There's nowhere to go. Yeah.
There's nowhere to go. We can't swim in 185 mile per hour winds with 12 feet, 15 feet, 16 feet of storm surge to go to the neighbors that's a few hundred yards away and try to get into their second story. There's no one coming to get us. We're here. And our house is filling up with water like a fishbowl.
Oh my goodness. What do you do? How do you make it?
We start looking for things that float. We don't have a boat. We don't have life jackets.
Okay.
We have extension cords to use as ropes.
Oh my goodness.
We have a cot mattress that has a plastic cover that's floating. That's our raft. We have pool toys. I stick an inner tube pool toy around my daughter.
That was the first thing that came to my mind was pool toys, actually.
Yeah,
because those come inside. They're in the bath. I keep mine in the bathtub because they're dirty and gross. I put them in the bathtub when the storm's coming, and that was the first thing that popped in my mind.
Yeah.
How long do you guys have to survive in water and high winds, floating, and a really perilous situation?
So we got to the point that we were terrified that we were going to drown inside the house. The water got that high. And we made a very brief trip outside, thinking that outside would be better because then we would still have breathing room.
Okay.
That didn't work. That didn't last but 30 minutes. We ended up back inside the house and the water just kept, up, up, up. Eventually, we were 3 feet of breathing space inside our house at our ceiling when we finally made the decision to go into our attic. Now, the reason we hadn't gone into our attic before that, one, there's nothing stopping the hurricane from ripping the roof off. Sure. So we're that much closer to the storm. And two, we were genuinely frightened that we were going to drown in our attic. There's no way out of our
attic.
There's
no way out. There's no exit.
No dormers, no way to cut through the roof and get out onto the roof. Nope. Once you're in there, that's it. So when we had about 2 feet of breathing room at the ceiling, we made the decision to get into the attic. The process was challenging. We did have a ladder, drop down ladder from our attic. So we had way to get into the attic, but we had to get a young child and 5 dogs and ourselves into the attic. By the time we got the last dog into the attic, there was 1 foot of breathing room, and I had to dive under our door frame to get into the room that had the attic access.
I can't even imagine that. I cannot even imagine that, Tara. Like, it's and you were probably wet, right? One of the things ocean water in the Bahamas is warm, but it's not body temperature warm. And when the storm comes through, you've got the wind. So you were probably wet and cold and trying to keep your kids safe. And I'm going to bet that I can't imagine. So, and how many hours when storms stall out, it's a long time. So you've got the agitation that builds. No matter how many times I've been through it, when the feeder bands begin to come through, I'm not panicked, but it does raise my agitation. Mm-hmm. In fact, I will say I didn't grow up here, but like after living in the tropics or the near tropics for over 20 years, when the pressure drops, when the storm gets close enough and the pressure drops, that's when like I can feel, when I see the ants start to climb up the walls pre-storm, mm-hmm. like it's just like a little switch that goes off. It's like, all right, it's time to get ready.
Yep.
And then when the things that you think are going to keep you safe are not, and you're in survival mode, this was probably 12 hours.
It was more.
Okay.
So the water started entering the house around 4 a.m. We went to the attic by 11 a.m.
And then it's dark.
Then
it's dark and there's no windows. So,
and it's very, very loud.
Like the people, I've never heard this noise, but this is where the people say it sounds like a train.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, very loud. And every time a tree branch hits the roof, and we can feel the structure of the roof shifting.
Oh gosh. Oh my goodness. So scary. So scary.
Exactly. So we're cold. We're cold. We're wet. We have very little food, very little water. We are
terrified.
In shock. Yeah. Right. Running on adrenaline for the last 7-8 hours. And so everyone's shivering. It's not that cold, but it's shock, right?
It's shock. And the water, like, this is why you can't stay in the ocean for mm-hmm. like a long time, because it is colder than your body. So you can get really cold. Like, that's why. Yeah. And the shock. So your blood sugar drops. Oh.
So we spent 24 hours in the attic.
Okay.
No light, very little light, preserving our cell phone light to use when absolutely necessary.
Oh my goodness.
No cell signal once we went into the attic. So,
oh, did you have cell signal before you went into the attic?
We had cell signal up until the point we went into the attic. It is the only time in anyone's memory that we have had cell signal during a hurricane. So we were able to check what the hurricane was doing right up until we went into the attic.
Because it's my theory that they just shut, like, I sort of know when the storm is close, when everything shuts off. I just think that they shut it off in advance so that they don't have explosions all over town. They're like, you know, because it goes, I'm just like, and we're done. See you in 24 hours. How do you know? So you have no, this is another thing that I've actually never lived through. Like, so by the time I moved to Florida, they were able to do the storm windows indoors. So mm-hmm. I never lived through the metal coverings on the outside of the house. But people do say that one of the stresses is you can't see out what's happening. Yeah. Like, it's keeping you safe, but all you have is the sound mm-hmm. of branches hitting and the wind. So you're in the attic, you're cut off from being able to see anything. How do you figure out when it's over and you can come out?
So we spent the longest night of our lives. Like I said, we went to the attic around 11 a.m. and we spent the entire night. Our daughter slept miraculously.
Shock. Probably.
Shock. Yeah. The dogs slept. miraculously.
The blessings of being a...
Yes. My wife and I did not.
No.
And I literally sat with my back against one of the bracing, roof bracing, feeling it move with every time the wind would, you know, have a big gust, repeating over and over again, please let the roof hold. 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 All night.
And it did hold.
And it did hold.
Okay.
The roof, we never had any problem with the roof. There was never water in the attic. We were watching the water rise in the ladder area, and each rung of the ladder as it would disappear would be our indication that it was going higher. And when we plateaued sometime around 11 p.m., it's like, okay.
12 hours in the attic.
It's not getting any higher. That's good. Maybe we won't drown in our attic. Maybe as long as the roof doesn't rip off, maybe we'll survive. Maybe. Went through the whole night. Woke up around 5 a.m. Pitch black. You can't see your hand.
Right.
Take the cell phones out of there, like little baggies that are nice and safe from the water. Take the cell phones out, turn them on, look at the water. Wait. We can see ladders that we couldn't see before. The water is going down.
The water's receding. Okay.
And at around about the same time, we could hear a definite decrease in the noise. So water's going down, noise is less. That means the storm is leaving.
The storm is leaving, but it's nighttime.
Yeah. So it's still 5 o'clock in the morning. It's still dark. Yeah. We can't see anything. So we're going on. I can see the water level and I can hear it's a little less windy. So we're still waiting. Yeah. Like at that point, we're like, okay, we're alive. We're not going to die. Have no idea what the next 2 hours is going to be. Have no idea what the next 2 weeks, 2 years is going to look like. Nothing. It's just minute to minute to minute.
Yeah.
Sun came up, you know, 7, 8, because it's still really cloudy and you can't see a lot. And we get a little bit of light. And we watch that water decrease and decrease. And we take a guess at estimating that we might be able to get out of the attic around noon.
Okay.
It was about 11:30 a.m. we came down to the attic. So 24 hours almost to the minute that we were in the attic. Water receded down to about ankle height in the house. Get all the dogs out. Get the child out. Everybody's situated on
countertops,
our master bedroom bed, because that was like the safe zone, and it looks like a bomb went off on the inside of our house. Our really expensive hurricane impact windows and doors did not break. They did, however, open up.
Well, and they're designed to, bizarrely, is something that like I have been told, like they're designed to let things pass through at a certain point so that I'm not the engineer. I just take people's word for it. I was like, should this be happening? And the guy was like, that's what they're designed to do. And I was like, I don't understand how this is the good plan, but okay.
And I didn't know that at the time either. Yeah.
well, it's counterintuitive. Yeah. It's like, you're supposed to keep the storm outside windows.
Yes. Yes. So the house looked like a bomb went off. Everything's broken. Our living room furniture is sitting on our kitchen island.
Like, oh my goodness.
Tilting on our kitchen island. We can barely walk anywhere. Everything's covered in ocean silt, ocean mud, seaweed. Yeah. Everything's wet.
Did you see any fishies go through when you were watching the water? I don't know exactly what I would do if I saw that when I was in the house. I tell you the truth.
Yes. Sure. To be fair, at the time, that was the least.
Right. No.
Of our worries. In hindsight, there's been a lot of conversation about what if there had been a shark?
Right. Or anything.
What would have happened? It could have gotten worse.
Or I just don't know. Like, I just think it would be like, okay, you don't belong here. And this is the people's space.
So within a couple of minutes of actually coming down out of the attic, rescuers arrived.
Okay.
It was still blowing 90 mile an hour.
So they knew, they were aware, and they were ready to check.
They were aware. We were one of the very first. They they came to on the entire island.
So they had your distress call. There was probably a neighbor with higher ground and more visibility that was reporting your information. They came in their little Zodiac boat to get you guys out of there?
Pretty much, yeah. Little open boat, three guys. One of the guys had to swim in because they couldn't bring the boat to our back door because then they risked like wrecking the boat. That's not where boats go. So the boat had to stay in the canal. Most of the yard was still underwater. You couldn't see our swimming pool. We had to wade out in waist-high water, 90-mile-an-hour wind.
It's still 90 miles an hour.
Still blowing 80 to 90 mile an hour.
Oh, my
And we're
goodness.
Out in the hurricane.
And they're in a boat. Like, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
Just for perspective, I think it's 25-mile-an-hour winds is a small craft warning, and you're standing outside, leaving the house, getting into a small craft. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So
oh, my God.
The rescue in and of itself, like, aside from everything that we had just survived, was traumatic.
But also, were you feeling relief and a push to do it? Did you feel like this is the next safe move?
Well,
like, we need to do this?
Seeing the rescuer pop up out of the ocean, we're like, where the heck did you come from? But that moment was someone else is here to lead.
Okay.
I'm going to put all of my trust, all of my faith, whatever they tell me to do, that's what I'm going to do because someone else is here to take over. And so that's what we did. We did what they said. They got us out of there. We were taken to a staging area, sort of a shelter, but not. We were able to get from that point to some amazing Good Samaritans that put us up in their house. We waited out the rest of the storm there. They fed us. They clothed us. We had beds to sleep in. Folks that were acquaintances that we would have said hi to in the school drop-off line, and that's it. We didn't know them, and they took us in.
Yeah.
I can't say thank you enough to folks like those folks that put us up and the folks that came out in a storm and risked their lives to come and get us.
Yeah.
We were on the island for 48 hours after the storm, and then we evacuated to South Florida.
Okay, so 48 hours, and so what you experienced is a total loss. Like there's really nothing to come back from. That is a really, really tough story, and I want to say thank you for sharing it with us. You told it very calmly, which means that you have probably told it a lot, and you've done a lot of work.
As I tell this story, I've lost count how many times I've told this story. My face is red. My face is not normally red. That's anxiety. My heart is beating. Every time I tell the story, same thing.
Still. So the official death toll of Dorian is 74. I looked it up. That's actually a massively high death count from a hurricane, truthfully. But like with all storms, even the article that wrote this, they said that this is estimated to be much lower than probably the real count. If people have never seen it, it's just very hard to understand, to figure out what actually happens in the aftermath when something has wiped everything out, especially when you're talking about a place that is rural or island communities where they, you know, you just don't know who is, you don't always know who is there to start and who's thereafter. It's hard to correct the data. It's crazy. But the point is that it's not an overstatement to say that you're very lucky to have made it through.
Yeah.
And that in itself is not to say that the decisions that you made leading up to the storm were anything other than the correct decisions, right? Mm-hmm. We live in the path of storms. But invest in structures that are supposed to stay. And to be fair, the structure did stay, but that doesn't mean that your life may not be at risk. You followed all of the instructions. You were ready. The official instructions are to be ready for 72 hours, right? Mm-hmm. Which anybody who lives in a storm path, we've got slightly prepperish tendencies. Like you've always got 3 days worth of stuff. Like when you prep for a storm, we know that that could mean a month without power. So we're like ready. We're ready.
Mm-hmm.
But when the water comes to your ceiling, no one is ready for that.
Exactly. In the aftermath, if you had looked at the exterior of our house, it looked fine.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
All of the windows were fine. The exterior concrete wall was fine. The sheet metal roof, there's not a single panel off the roof. Not one.
But to make it through, that is, and also, like you said, prior to this, the high water line, which is what we look to when you like are looking in a storm zone, they show you where the water was before. Mm-hmm. That's all you have to go. All right. So you evacuate to my home, South Florida. I hope that we were kind to you when you got there. It is evacuations from storm in storm country. Like, you take care of the people who come through. It's one of the things that we do, not just here, anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. Anywhere people have been through it, try to do their best. But this part of your story that you shared with me on the forum is that you guys were pushed to start over in a new place. And you mentioned that you are now in New Brunswick. How did that happen?
In the immediate aftermath of the storm, we were suffering terribly with PTSD, trauma, just a need to not go back there, not to ever experience that again, not to ever put ourselves and our daughter in the path of a hurricane, because obviously we thought we were going to be fine. This storm was way outside of fine. The storms are getting worse. This is the worst storm that's ever been. The next one, maybe worse than this one. You mentioned earlier about the Saffir-Simpson scale, and Category 5 is the highest one.
Yeah.
For now.
Right. Well, so it's at the top. So they just, it's like there's a plus sign there. There's no end of that range. It's like 0 to this is 1, and this to this is 2, and then 5, it's like this and forever, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So we very quickly, in a haze of trauma, decided we were not going back. There were no legal pathways of immigration for us to remain in the United States.
Right, because you're Commonwealth.
Because we are Commonwealth, we are Bahamian citizens. There we investigated, we did all of our due diligence and checked to see, is there a way that we can legally remain in the United States? There was not. There was never a question of us staying in the United States illegally. Never. So the next question was, okay, well, we're not going back to the Bahamas and we can't stay in the United States. Where are we going? Let's go to Canada.
Where every Bahamian who's never been experienced weather below the temperature of 68 wants to be.
So in due fairness, for us, when we live on the beach, we go to the snow for vacation.
Okay, so you did at least have a concept. You were not like Cool Runnings.
No, but to be fair, vacationing for a week in the snow is a completely different experience than living in it permanently.
I believe that. Definitely believe that. So you moved, 2019 was the storm. You moved in 2019 or it was like 2020?
We left immediately. We were in Canada 6 weeks after Hurricane Dorian.
6 weeks.
Yep.
Wow. All right. And you've got nothing. You were you able to take, was there anything recoverable from your house?
We recovered some, not a lot. My wife had photo albums, hundreds and hundreds of photo albums from childhood that are gone. They can't be replaced. We had childhood things of our daughters that we were saving for her, gone, not replaceable.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, I had all of our, I don't know, 15,000 digital photographs. We travel, we take lots of photographs, amateur photographers, in a Ziploc bag inside our fire safe.
Right.
Apparently fire safes are not waterproof, and Ziploc bags don't necessarily keep out salt water all the time. 15,000 photographs gone.
Oh my goodness.
So we had what we could you know, salvage and clean. We had clothes that were donated to us when we were in Florida. We were blessed to be financially stable enough to purchase things.
Yeah, no, that's, that should not go understated. Like, that's one of the big challenges of surviving the storms.
We were blessed in that our financial stability, you know, we weren't destitute. We weren't having to sleep on the street corner.
Yeah.
So we packed up what we had in our car and we drove from South Florida with our 6-year-old and 5 dogs to Canada, having never been to New Brunswick. And we had visited Vancouver many years before, had never been to where we were driving to.
Just
no
points.
Idea. No knowing. Idea. No idea what we were going to do when we got there, but that's where we were going.
This probably sounds to people who've never seen anybody who's got storm anxiety, it might seem like it's an extreme reaction, but I did not live through Andrew, but I know about 50 people who did. And they have a very similar reaction to like to this. Most of them, there's some crazy statistic that almost everybody who was in Miami for Andrew doesn't actually live here anymore. Like almost everybody who lived through it eventually over the period of like 10 or 15 years left. One person I know who lives in Central Florida, where she moved because she thought that was storm safe, she still experiences anxiety. And now, like you said, the storms aren't doing what they're supposed to do. Now they come to Central Florida and she's super pissed off about that. She's super pissed off about that.
Got to keep moving north.
She's just super. She's like, this is not the deal, Mother Nature. So do you still have family and friends in the Bahamas? Do you go back?
We go back regularly. The Bahamas will always be home. I say that I call New Brunswick home, but we still refer to the Bahamas at home as home.
Did you guys do therapy and stuff? Are you like, are you
Lots,
lots,
lots, lots.
Probably
Lots and lots of
ongoing.
therapy. Yes, lots of therapy for ourselves and for our young daughter. We were really concerned about her mental well-being. She was 6 years old. She's faced with death. You're not supposed to be faced with that at 6 years old. So we got her into therapy right away. She took to it wonderfully. And she recovered from the storm much faster than my wife and I did.
Well, that is when people say kids are resilient. That's actually what I think they mean, right? Like, if you give them the tool, not that they will bounce back on their own, but if you give
No,
them
but
the
if you,
tools
yes.
and you work with them. And one of the differences between in your situation, and I'm not an expert on this, but I've, talked to a lot of people and been through my own experiences. There is a, she always had you there. You were the person who's in charge of keeping her safe, and you were doing that while you were there, right? But you were the person in charge of keeping her safe and you safe, you and your wife. Like the adult has a different experience. The adult has a different experience. And I think that when you talk about seeing the rescuer and being like,
And
oh,
giving, yes.
thank you. Like finally somebody else is here. Like I can only imagine what a relief that was. And thank goodness it was. All right. So this is quite a story. Thank you for sharing it. It's very, very intense. You've written a book about this. I'm curious what inspired you and motivated you to turn your story into a book. Because you had a choice to just like live with it and, do your own thing and not talk about it ever again to anybody other than the people in your circle.
The book began as therapy. So I've been a writer, so to speak, most of my life. I wrote short stories as a child. I wrote poetry as a teenager and well into my adulthood. Always kind of in the back of my head, oh, I wish I could write a novel. It's one of those things you say, oh, I wish I could do this, and then you never do it, right?
Eight
So
out of 10 adults want to write a book.
yes, exactly. So it started out with my therapist, oh, you're a writer, write it down. Write it down. We're going to read it again and again and again and again and again.
Desensitization, baby.
Yes. And I'm tears and snot running down my face and sobbing and trying to read. And it's not for the faint of hearted. But it worked. And it worked for me. And so somewhere, 6, 8, a year into therapy of writing it out, it occurred to me that I had enough written down that it was the basis for a book. And so with my wife's encouragement, she had told me for years that I should write a book. Okay, I'm gonna try to make this a book. Who wants to read someone's journal
Right.
to a
There's a
certain
big
degree?
difference, right? There's a big difference here.
So a lot of editing, a lot of process of turning what is someone's personal journal into a memoir that someone else would be interested in reading.
All right. So, in a minute, I'm going to tell, we're going to get to the final questions, which is going to be a dramatic shift since the story was so intense because that's very light
Yes.
and fun. But tell us where people, the book is available now for pre-order. Tell us what the book is called, where people will find it when it comes out for real. And we're going to include the pre-order link in the show notes and in the email that goes to the subscribers at Imperfect Adulting. So everybody should sign up for that. Okay.
So the book is called The Ocean in Our Blood. It is available for pre-order now through my website, www.tarapyfrom.com. And pre-order means you can order it now and it will be shipped to you now. It will be available in retail stores and online at Amazon.com in July of this year.
Very exciting. All right. So we will put that link in the show notes and in the email. I want to thank you very much for sharing your story and including the information about the pre-order. That is very cool. All right. Now, drum roll. I'm going to ask you three questions. Bum, ba-dum, bum, bum. These are rapid fire just for fun. The idea is that you will answer with whatever comes first to mind. And that's how this goes. All right. Okay. Do you consider yourself a morning person or an evening person?
A morning person.
Do you have a favorite holiday? And if so, what is it?
It's Christmas. I know that's kind of generic, but it's Christmas.
No, I love it. How could there be a wrong answer for that? You get to decide what your favorite holiday is. It's Christmas, yay. All right. What is something that you would really like to see in person in your life? Like something you would like to see in during your life? It can be a place, like a park, a location. It can be an event, an experience, whatever. But what's one thing that's on your bucket list there?
So actually, this is a conversation we've been having recently because we're actually thinking of traveling there. I want to climb the Sydney Harbour Bridge in Sydney, Australia.
That looks awesome. That is also on my list. And it's funny, I'm not a heights person, but that is on my list of things that I will, when I go to Sydney, I am going to be like, put on my big girl pants yep. and do that experience. It just looks like an amazing experience. I love that you shared that. That's fantastic. That's it, Tara Pyfrom. Thank you so much for being an amazing guest today on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.